Chapter 18. Landing Pad. Callie moved to join Tessa at the window. From Lana's office, she could see the outside of Celine Boulevard, the curve of the main dome, and the long tunnel leading out to the landing fields. Heavy power lines reached across the dusty soil between structures, and a few antennas reached up toward the earth. Long, inky shadows stretched across everything as the sun crept lower and lower. Hundreds, maybe thousands of figures staggered down there, scattered across the broad plains of the moon. Men in elegant robes, women in formal dresses or suits, children in ragged, dirty shrouds. They reached as far as she could see, even out to the wide circle of the landing pad. Lana sat back down in her chair. She set both hands on the desk, took a deep breath, and pushed it back out. Her breath smelled like vodka. Callie looked at Tessa.
How long do you think we have?
I don't know.
She looked back at the flight plan still open on the desktop.
I only know basic things about the carriers. There's just too many variables, and they're still kind of far out, so a small change there could mean a big just guess.
Tessa swallowed.
Maybe 10 minutes.
She waved a hand at the screen, at the captain's body floating above her flight chair.
There's really no way to be sure, though.
Callie looked at Gordon. The sheriff scowled and swiped at his tab.
This is an emergency, he called out, and his voice echoed in the hall outside. Everyone clear both levels of Celine and Chandra immediately. This is not a drill. We've got a carrier coming in, and it's not slowing down. I repeat, evacuate sections Celine and Chandra immediately.
Lana closed her eyes, sighed, and then opened them to glare at Gordon. She tapped a few controls on her desk. Alarms began to sound. Shuffling footsteps and nervous voices leaked through the door. The trickles grew into a steady stream and then crested into a river for a few moments before dying back to silence. Tessa cleared her throat.
If we don't know where it's going to come down, isn't evacuating one or two sections pointless?
They're the closest to the landing pad, said Gordon.
But we don't know where it's coming down,
she repeated.
Callie set a hand on her arm. We have to do something, Tessa.
We should probably evacuate too,
said Lana, straightening up from her chair. Gordon pinned her back down with a glare. Someone pounded on the door. Callie glanced at the sheriff, but he was having a murmuring conversation with his tab. She reached for the controls just as the door slid open and Jake pushed his way in.
What the hell's going on? They get back inside?
Ismi followed him into the office.
I didn't hear a breach alarm.
It's the carrier,
Callie said.
It has clients on it.
Jake's expression slid from confused to understanding, then dropped neatly into worried.
Fuck.
Ismi looked up at the screen and the body drifting in the cockpit.
How bad is it? It's a disaster,
Lana said from the chair. Her shoulders sagged.
The pilots are both dead,
said Callie.
Possibly a lot of the passengers, too.
Ismi studied the video feed.
Is there autopilot on? I don't think so,
Callie said.
The captain looked like she was trying to adjust something before they killed her. How long do we have before they arrive?
Ismi asked. Callie glanced at Tessa, then at the clock on the desktop.
5 minutes, give or take.
She looked out the window again, up at the sky. Between the dark, looming earth and the moon's horizon, she saw a glimmer of movement, the thin line of the Goddard reflecting the last low rays of sunlight. She could just pick out the details. It looked like a pair of capsules held together by a bright white superstructure. Back on Earth, sitting on the ground, these standard models looked like beached whales or submarines, and once they'd latched onto an elevator, they resembled elaborate Ferris wheel pods. In space, though, they were graceful, sturdy, and fast. Too fast, in this case.
Oh, hell, said Gordon. The landing beacon's still off.
He raised his tab and flicked through a series of subroutines.
They're pretty much right on course,
said Tessa.
Which is kind of impressive, if you think about it.
Jake joined them at the window. How much damage if they hit the landing pad?
Less than if they hit the city,
Lana said. Not good for the pad, said Gordon. Not good for any rescue carriers trying to land there.
The carrier grew rapidly in the window. Callie could see the cockpit and the power plant at either end, and the rough shape of the climbing array between the two pods.
Emergency protocols activating, said a smooth voice from the screen. It sounded more masculine than the buggy AIs. Autopilot engaged. Emergency deceleration and landing procedures initiated.
Callie swung back to the window. The carrier puffed out shimmering clouds of gas. It didn't seem to slow down, but it reared up and leaned to the side. The move put it more in line with the landing pad as it rushed forward. Retrojets fired again. And again. 10 kilometers away. 8. 6. On screen, Kantos twitched once. Her fingers flexed, clawed at the air.
All passengers, said the AI. Brace for impact.
The Goddard hit the landing pad at an angle, rear first. The superstructure bent, gas puffed and crystallized around it. A few sparks danced, and the second capsule, the cargo section, shot free like a wet seed squeezed between fingertips. It spun back up above the landing pad, veering off to the side. On screen, there was a flash of violent action, and the camera went black. The landing pad cratered, cracks spreading out through the lunacrete until it crumbled at the edges. Clouds of lunar dust billowed up and tumbled away. The carrier's superstructure bent more, and the front capsule burst along one side. A cloud of air turned to snow. Bodies spun out across the surface of the moon. Callie wasn't sure if they were alive, or dead, or reanimated. A few clouds of flaming fuel and oxidants swelled up and were smothered by the vacuum. Pieces of the carrier's superstructure launched away, unhindered by atmospheric pressure or harsh gravity. Some of them vanished up into the sky, out of Callie's view. Others scythed across the ground, crushing cables, antennas, and zombies as they drew jagged paths through the regolith. One soared off to the left and struck the main dome of the city. The vibration rang through the walls. The window trembled in front of them. The Goddard plowed forward through a series of small storage domes just off the platform. It shared its momentum with them, sending chunks of lunacrete and aluminum out like the flares off a Roman candle. The wreck pushed on a few more meters, grinding up pipes and cables along the ground and knocking zombies beneath its bulk. It crashed against a fourth dome, a larger one, halfway between the landing pad and the main structure of Luna City, and finally settled there. A few sparks and jets of shimmering gas marked the end of its journey. The second pod finished its brief, whirling arc through space and dropped back down onto the lunar surface. It tumbled through a field of solar cells, sending black shards knifing out in every direction. One of them shattered right in front of Callie, exploding against the thick glass. She yelped and flinched back, bumping into Izmi. Jake flinched, too.
God damn it!
Tessa stared in amazement. The lights inside the office flickered. Gordon shot a look at Lana and headed out of the office. When the door opened, they could hear distant shouts and cries.
I'm going to need all of you on deck, he said. People just got one more reason to panic.
The door closed behind him. A piece of lunacrete the size of Callie's head soared past and struck the wall just above the window. A few smaller fragments of solar panel impacted and created a haze of black shards. Something else bounced against the window, and she had just enough time to register fingers and a pair of rings before the hand vanished down into the inky shadows below. The lights flickered again. Callie glanced up at the LED bar.
What the hell is that? I think Luna City is switching over to fusion power for the night, Tessa said. But it's a little uneven because a bunch of the solar cells were just smashed while they were still online, and I think one of the fusion generators was just destroyed.
Lana moved to the window. Outside, a haze of dust and particles drifted down toward the surface.
This is a disaster, she said.
Callie glanced at her.
On the plus side, I think you can call Discorp for an emergency evac now. I don't hear any alarms, said Tessa. No alarms means no breaches. That's good, right?
Another piece of the carrier's superstructure hit the dome and scraped its way down across the window. In the few swiftly shrinking bright spots left between the shadows, zombies staggered back to their feet and continued their lurching paths toward the city's entrances. Callie could see that a few of them had lost legs, and they dragged themselves across the regolith, over ground cables, and past the few that had stopped moving altogether. The sun went down, and the shadows swallowed the lunar landscape. A chime sounded through the office, and Callie saw Ismi's finger twitch from a haptic tap. She raised her tab.
It's Henri. Henri's still alive? Apparently.
Ismi flicked at a control.
Hey, old friend.
Hey, yourself, Henri's voice responded. Good to hear from you.
You too. It's been bad.
I'm sure. Was hoping to talk to Wagid. Is he tied up at the moment?
Ismi opened her mouth and swayed in place as the words hit her in the chest. Callie wrapped an arm across her shoulders.
Hey, Henri, it's Callie. Mind if I put you up on a big screen?
You can try, but you won't get anything. These things, they tore down our main tower out here. Had to jury-rig some things just to get an audio signal out.
How did you manage that?
Asked Tessa.
Did you use the interior?
It's not important right now. Is Wagid and everyone else there?
Ismi took a breath, closed her eyes.
He's not.
Jake pulled the call over to his own tab.
Wagid's dead. They got him. Ismi's the boss now.
The voice on the tab went silent. Callie cleared her throat.
Henri?
Yes, still here. I'm sorry. I didn't even consider why my call got routed to you, Ismi. You have my sympathies.
Thank you,
she said.
And please forgive me for moving on, but I think you'll still all need to hear this.
Not a social call, then,
said Lana.
Megatol, hello. No, I'm afraid not. I've been going through everyone's correspondence logs in my spare time, and I noticed...
Wait, said Jake. You've been doing what?
Going through the logs. Messages, mail, all of that.
Why?
Because I'm very nosy and a bit voyeuristic, said Henri. You all knew this. I even told you I'd be doing it.
Did you go through everyone's emails?
Interrupted Tessa.
Just out of curiosity.
Not yet, he said. But I know just jumped to the top of the queue.
Tessa muttered something under her breath. Callie waved them all to silence.
What did you find?
You all know Megan was Gilliman's contact here at Osiris, yes? Part of that little off-the-books network of his sending him tips and picking things up?
Ismi squared her shoulders and straightened up a bit.
Wagid suspected. It never caused any problems, so he left it alone and didn't say anything.
Yes, well, she's looped into a series of back-and-forth emails at the beginning of the week. Gilliman wanted the meteorite that fell on Hades. Megan was going to bring it to him.
Callie blinked.
He was trying to get the thing we think is causing all this? For what? For money,
said Ismi.
It's why he does everything.
Jake nodded.
This thing reanimates the dead. I'm betting there's a few dozen companies and governments back on Earth that'd pay top dollar for it.
He stared at Lana while he spoke.
He wasn't trying to get it, Henri said. That's what I'm telling you. He had it. His new contact at Eron was Arturo Mendez. The boy sent a message that says he was heading to Osiris with the meteorite, where he'd handed off to Megan.
Callie's brain leaped ahead.
You mean it's been...
Henri's voice cut her off.
You salvaged it from his trike when you found him. Unless you dumped it somewhere, it's in his gear up on the roof of Anubis.
The meteorite wasn't expanding its range,
said Tessa.
It was moving. We brought it with us.
Son of a bitch,
muttered Jake.